Devin Driscoll, you're a law student, so I'm curious on your perspective on special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of President Trump and possible links to Russia. President Trump says this is a fishing expedition. Where do you see this headed, and what are the stakes?
Well, where it's heading is beyond my pay grade or anyone in the room. Robert Mueller is a consummate professional in law enforcement, and I have every confidence in his ability to do this investigation fairly and fully. What I think is troubling are questions around the president and decision-making, both by those in his campaign's employ and himself. Ultimately himself, the buck stops there. And as we see more indictments coming out over the coming months, questions of relationships with Russia or other international actors are things that I think we need to be aware of. And it's easy for this to sound like a boogeyman, right? Russia is a historical antagonist, and so it's easy to sort of put – in 2012, we were laughing about Russia as an antagonist, international antagonist. So I understand that that can be troubling, but the level of engagement on questions of American elections from Russian agents, I think, is really troubling when you get down in the weeds and think about these conversations people are having. And so I'm hopeful that this doesn't drag on too long, but I want it to drag on long enough to get the fair and full analysis of what happened.
Lisa Pelosi, we can remember when Ronald Reagan had a very successful campaign ad back in the 80s, the bear in the woods. The Soviet Union was considered a threat. But now there's a very partisan view of Russia, and it's only Democrats who are more concerned about potential links between the Trump campaign and Russia. What is your view of the Mueller probe and the efforts by some Republicans to challenge the credibility of Mueller?
I think there's really been a bit of a dark cloud over the Trump presidency since even before it began. You know, it was even in that transition time after the election that that dark cloud has been following. The president seems to be distracted by it. Every once in a while, he's tweeting out about it because something happens in the news. So he gets distracted, and then he only adds to it. I think that's what you mentioned, but you know, some of the things that he said that could be used perhaps against it. When these investigations go on this long, you almost want them just to be over. And you know that the people involved in it know what happened or what didn't happen. So it's best for the country that this could be, that Mueller does his work, he concludes this as quickly as he can, and then whatever the ramifications from it happen.
Providence College professor Joe Camerano, why doesn't President Trump simply say that, you know, there is ample evidence that Russia did meddle in the election? The precise impact we don't know, but why doesn't he call that out?
Well, this is an example where the political science, which I thought may not be relevant anymore because of the election of Trump, really does instruct us that what you have to do is you have to understand who Donald Trump is, what his first sort of successes were, how he got along in business, what worked, what didn't, to see the patterns of behavior. And one of those patterns in his character, and I grew up in the New York area, so I've known him since he was in the news for the first years in New York. I think what you're seeing is this is somebody who really has a difficult time admitting he's wrong. And he will never do that. He will never say, I am wrong. And the problem with that is when you make bombastic statements and you're president, you're going to have to do that at some point in time. So whatever the reason, I think he's hurting himself, not just on Russia, but on everything, by making these claims and then us seeing they're obviously incorrect.
Gabriella Domenstein, quick comment on the same question. What is your perspective on the Mueller probe and why the president has not called out Russia?
I think it says a lot more about the Mueller probe that Donald Trump and Fox News are trying to vilify Mueller. I think that's the answer that we have. Why would he want to vilify Mueller if he didn't have something to hide? I agree. I want this to be over. But I don't think that we should cease to be shocked by the fact that Russia interfered in an American election and that the current sitting president is trying to stop this investigation from going to find out the truth.
So could I add in on that? The thing that really bothers me.
Joe Camerano?
What really bothers me about this isn't Donald Trump's response, isn't Donald Trump's behavior, not even Fox News' behavior. It's the behavior of Americans who are refusing to even entertain the idea that somebody interfered with the most sacred aspect of a democracy, mm-hmm. and that's an election.
Yeah.
Why not? Why aren't more Americans outraged about that?
Well, I think we're in a period of polarization, and that, you know, we've gotten to the point where we have forgotten. I just went to a Bernice King's talk, Martin Luther King's daughter, and she said, look, we have to stop dismissing the other side. The problem is we've forgotten that. And we're in an era where competition is all that matters, winning is all that matters, and as a result, we cannot acknowledge the fault within ourselves.
We can't talk about President Trump without mentioning fake news. But Brandon Bell, some people think it's a little bit hypocritical when President Trump cries fake news because he did popularize the false claim that President Obama was not born in the U.S. Give us your take on that. And, you know, do you think that, as many Trump supporters believe, that the media is out to get President Trump?
I think it's factual that the media is trying to get out to get President Trump. I mean,
but
I think that's...
isn't it? I mean, I think the Washington Post and New York Times are doing a lot of valid reporting on legitimate stories. Are they not?
I do agree with that. And I think that, look, he gets very defensive, clearly. If he's attacked, he attacks back. That's the street fighting thing that I was talking about earlier. And that's not immune to people in his own party. Corker, Graham, look at the people he's had fights with and then made up with and he's fine with suddenly. And I think at the end of the day, look, the First Amendment, you know, as a lawyer who, particularly 25 years ago when I was in law school, really appreciated constitutional law, the First Amendment is crucial, in society. It doesn't just give freedom of the press. It also doesn't immunize them from criticism. And I think that the press deserves to be criticized for this entire election cycle.
Well, be specific. Where in particular do you see the media falling down in your view?
I mean, let's just take yesterday, for example, after the president's physical exam. When has anyone ever seen a president's doctor, even if the president put him out in front of the press room, in the Brady room there, to answer questions, ask questions for 49 minutes about everything from, Propecia to, cognitive abilities, And now you have news organizations today saying, doctors from news organizations saying that, he's got heart disease. That doctor might not have said it, but he's got heart disease. The only time in history that I could think of that a president's health was under so much scrutiny when there really was no issue was when there was an issue. And again, I'll use President Reagan. He was shot. So, of course, people wanted to know what happened after he was shot and what impact that had. So I think that that press conference, there was a cartoon today. I don't know if you tweeted it out. I saw it. It was hysterical. It's the doctor up on the stage saying the president's in excellent health, and you see all these press folks who we all know because we see them every day in that room, and they're like, oh, no, oh, my God. Like really? He's in good health? He's okay? And so that's really just one example of many, but it's the scrutiny that just goes to a different level. And also, I'll just leave it at this other point here, and that's maybe bringing family members into the fold is not the greatest idea in the world. However you think of that, although I think that Ivanka Trump brings a lot to the table, I think that others in his family bring a lot to the table, but, he gets offended when his family members are attacked. And I would, too. If my family members were attacked, I'm never going to be president, but I just wanted to say that.
Gabriela Domanzan, we hear Republican Chairman Brandon Bell subscribing to this view that the media is out to get President Trump, but Trump got so much free publicity during the presidential race from the major cable networks. He's arguably a creation of the media. He got obsessive coverage in the New York tabloids back in the day. So has the media done as much to build President Trump up as to criticize him?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked for, as you mentioned at the beginning, I was a deputy campaign manager for Governor Martin O'Malley. And, there's certain rules in the media, right? So, for example, Morning Joe, right? You can't call in to Morning Joe. You have to be there to be on Morning Joe. Highest rated show, et cetera, et cetera. Every time candidate Trump would pick up the phone, they would put it on speaker, right? Every time the president had a rally, they would go. And the other thing is, look, I was a journalist. You know, I think once, always a journalist. I think that what you're seeing in the press briefings, these folks, as you know White House correspondents, spend 24 hours a day with these people as sources and as not sources. The frustration that you're feeling is two ways. You don't, as an American president, say you out and kick reporters out. You don't vilify CNN. You don't tweet pictures of, you know, CNN bloody on your shoe. Even Jeff Flake, who I know might not be your favorite if you're very conservative, but even Jeff Flake is calling him out on this. It reminds me of Mexico, right? In Mexico, the political parties control the press. That is what Donald Trump would like to do. And the other thing is, the challenges that you're seeing from the press is because the president doesn't say the truth and uses cabinet secretaries and institutions of government that we pay for to propagate lies. 2 days ago, when the new Department of Homeland Security secretary was being interviewed by the Senate, the Department of Homeland Security releases a report saying immigrants create more crimes than any other person. In fact, three out of four terrorist acts that happen in the United States come from immigrants. When they well knew that the majority of those were people that had been extradited from other countries in order to inflate the numbers. You have to be skeptical. And as a journalist who's disrespected, who is, you know, bullied by this president, I understand the animosity. And I respect the fact that they're still showing up, given that this president doesn't respect the Fourth Estate, doesn't appreciate being criticized, even if it's their job. I respect the job that they're doing tremendously.
Republican analyst Lisa Pelosi, some people from various sides of the partisan aisle think president is deliberately sowing distraction to take attention away from other things. Do you agree with that theory? Why or why not?
I think that's been his MO since the beginning, that when a story's not going his way, then he comes up. We saw that during the campaign. One day it's this issue, and then the next day it's another issue, and he just keeps moving along, and then the media is trying to, you know, keep up with him. But, you know, what you just said, it gave me a couple thoughts. First of all, this is not the first president who's used cabinet secretaries to go out and say the untruth. We know with Bill Clinton that he swore that he did not have sex with that woman, that all his cabinet folks went out there and they defended him on and on and on till finally the truth came out, and then all of a sudden that they felt betrayed.
I'm glad you're accepting that he's saying untruths, though, because that's a big deal.
Okay. So I just, you know, so the balance here, you know, and I didn't want to be put in a position of defending President Trump tonight. I was leaving that up to Brent. but I feel like it's, you know, a little bit of a tilt going on, so I did want to do that. As far as I didn't have an opportunity to really weigh in on the media part of it, and that's been something that I've been watching very carefully as a communications person over the campaign. There was a distinct bias against Trump as time went on, and you could see it in the way the reporters would report their how they set up their story, the facial expressions that they used, their nonverbals that they would use, to the point that after the election, and I'd be watching CBS Network News, and I'm going to call out a couple reporters, that I stopped watching Scott Pelley and Major Garrett because their bias of presenting, setting up the stories and presenting it was so extreme that I couldn't watch it anymore. I watched national news because I'm looking for an objective presentation of the news, and here's a major network doing it.
Devin Driscoll, you've been a Democratic political operative. What do you think about what Lisa Pelosi said? Has there been a slant against Trump in the media?
I think President Trump is very adept at playing people's perceptions of the media to his benefit. If there has been a shift, first of all, I absolutely accept the premise that President Trump is a creation of the media in the first instance, and that his response now to use them as a foil has been extraordinary. Because if there is a visual slant, if Major Garrett is scowling when he's reporting the news, it's because the news is scowl-inducing. It's because the behavior is such. I really trust a lot of these national and local news folks because they will. The bias that comes through is the frustration that they feel when an elected leader of the United States is willing to tell easily dismissed falsehoods When Sean Spicer is getting up at the podium and having to lie day in, day out about crowd size because the president's ordering him to, it's easy for folks, I think, who want to be telling the story of our business, our politics, to get frustrated and distracted by that sort of nonsense. Fake news ultimately isn't about the news. It's a dog whistle to people to say, you could ignore whatever inconvenient facts are being presented here. It's not ultimately about truth or disagreement. It's about saying, you know, you might have heard that I had that this has happened. Don't worry, that's fake news. You can just ignore the factual predicate underneath the story because it's unhelpful to the message we're trying to send. That's ultimately what fake news is. It's not about the content. It's about saying, just ignore this entirely and stay on message for us.
PC professor Joe Camerano, we remember back in the late 90s, a lot of people scoffed when Hillary Clinton talked about a vast right-wing conspiracy. But since then, we've come along with the internet, some dark places there, some very right-wing sites like Breitbart, obviously led previously by Steve Bannon. What role has that kind of media played in the Trump world?
Well, I think both sides, the right and the left, have media outlets that are disaggregated, and they have become, which we talk about now, these sort of small echo chambers that we're all sort of trapped in, where we only talk to and hear from people who have the same viewpoint we do. So, yes, there is. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a vast right-wing conspiracy. I would call it the interest group universe in the United States where they're kicking the left's butts when they win, and the left is kicking their butts when they lose. This is the natural part of the equilibrium that we're supposed to see. The big difference, I think, is in the 20th century, we had this sort of period of stability where objective journalism was the premier value of virtually all the media, and there were only a handful of media at the time. That, of course, has broken down. Politics has become a business now for the media. They used to lose money on the news. They now make money on the news. And so their economic imperative drives all of this. My advice to you is to stop watching network news and start listening to public radio. I'm not doing that just because.
I didn't tell him to say that.
And to read, and stop wasting your time with the networks, and stop wasting your time with
kids. But isn't that one of the great ironies of this age, that there's so much useful information that can be found, but not many people avail themselves of it? Gabriella Domenzain.
This is, it was really interesting. I was working to prepare for this, and I was looking at, year in review kind of stuff. And Amy Cola, who's here in the audience, helped me with USA Today, right? So less than 3% of the population reads the New York Times. We might be some of them, and that's amazing, but that's not what people read, right? USA Today is one of the most read newspapers. So we're sitting here, and these are the really, really important things that we should be discussing. The top three stories read last year by most Americans, one, a commercial about a kiss cam, was the top read story from USA Today. Two, is it all over for coconut oil? Yes and no. And three, a teenage girl who shot an elk in Missouri. It's really crazy, right? Social media is leading to us being able to pick and choose. Obviously, most people get their news from Facebook, from Twitter. It's creating these silos in which what you said, right? People aren't talking to each other.
And that brings me to the point of think about the old days. Politicians wouldn't pick their fights because
is Brandon Bell, state Republican chairman.
And, Buddy Cianci said it locally, you don't fight with someone who buys ink by the barrel. But now, so what? I'll just avoid them and I'll go on Twitter and say what I have to say. It doesn't make a difference. You can actually pick that fight. And, I have a really good relationship with NPR and the local press here and the political folks here, and I like that. He doesn't care. it doesn't matter to him. And I didn't get to comment on the creation of the media. Hey, he had $2 billion the last time I sat on a panel during the beginning of the primary, $2 billion in earned media. And that was in like January of 16 before the first primary or caucus.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk about what's ahead. You're listening to a live public forum at the Slavin Center at Providence College. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis, joined by Democratic operative Devin Driscoll, Rhode Island Republican Chairman Brandon Bell, Gabriela Domenzine of the Latino Policy Institute at Roger Williams University, Republican analyst Lisa Pelosi, and Providence College political science professor Joe Camerano.